Welcome once again to the E-Bone Zone, as I invite you to sit back, relax, and listen for the 379th time on this Friday, March 8th, 2024. I hope you'll enjoy this week's episode, Racing to Breakfast. A lot of interesting things can happen on a plane, and with interesting happenings come interesting sights. Try this one on for size, will ya? Airport agents at Boston Logan Airport found mummified monkey remains in a suitcase. They were found at a security screening for passengers on the flight, and a canine officer named Buddy, that's B-U-D-D-E-Y, sniffed them out. I know what you're thinking here, as am I. What is this? How did we get here? Well, it starts with a person who came home from the Congo back to the U.S. When the passenger was asked about what was in their luggage, they said it was filled with dried fish. And at this point, you and I both should know that that's an all-out lie. And if you don't, just roll the episode back 15 seconds. I'm sure you'll catch up. Boy, wasn't that a shock, though. Just put yourself in the shoes of the TSA agents for a second, will ya? The reason why this is such a big deal is because certain types of wild meat, known as bush meat, aren't allowed in the U.S. The traveler was carrying about 8 pounds of this monkey meat. And now that we know how we got here, why are we here in the first place? To be totally honest with you, that question is one I can't answer. Now, I'd like to be able to, but for the life of me, I just can't put my finger on why someone would fly from the Congo to the U.S. back home with luggage full of nothing but monkey remains. I can't even imagine how they went about getting those, much less why they decided to carry them across the international airspace back to the U.S., through the airport terminal, through the maze of people, and somehow no one raises any concerns until you get up to security and they say, hey, whatever's in there, that doesn't seem like it's filled with normal luggage. And then this guy, he's backed into a corner, right? So he's got to think of something quick. And all he can come up with is, I don't know, dried fish? Really? Anyway, the Customs and Border Patrol agents contacted the Center for Disease Control and then got word that the luggage should either be destroyed or returned to France. Now, if you want my 2 cents, of course you'd need to destroy it, because what are you going to do with it back in France? What are they going to do with this stuff? Put it in a museum? Why would you? Now that I'm thinking about it, if you ship it back to wherever it came from, they'll probably destroy it too. I can't think of anything better to do with it. I'm sorry, but if you were looking for an answer on this one from me that makes sense other than getting rid of the stuff, I don't know if you'll get it. This week, I would like to continue a tradition that I hold very close to my heart. I try and offer a good Christian podcast, so I thought I would begin sharing a new Bible verse each week. This week, I would like to share a verse from the book of Romans. Romans chapter 5, verse 1 says, therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. So let's take a look at this little by little. Paul is writing here to the church at Rome, and Romans chapter 5 begins a new section of Paul's letter to the Christians in Rome. So before Romans chapter 5 and chapters 1 through 4, he talks about how no one is made perfect by the law. No one is justified by the law, because justification is impossible by works. Nobody follows the law perfectly. Nobody even follows the law well. Human beings, they can only be declared righteous and escape God's angry judgment for our sin through what Christ did on our behalf, through Jesus' death on the cross. Listen to me here closely. No matter what anybody tells you, preacher, teacher, mom, dad, I don't care. We cannot work our way to Jesus. We cannot be reconciled to the Father by works. None of it. Nothing we can do. It's all about what Christ did. Doing what you want to do will get you nowhere. And to the other end of that spectrum, living and dying by the law will get you nowhere either. So what gets you places? What brings you to exactly where you need to be? Living as Jesus says to live. Living by Jesus' example. Being justified through faith. Having faith in Him and Him alone, because He's the only one that'll never let you down. So Paul here, he's describing what we've gained in being justified by faith. We've escaped the wrath of God, yes, but being righteous means so much more than just not being punished. It means living a holy life. It means living a life that shines for God. It's not in the clothes you wear. It's not in the version of the Bible you read. It's not the drinks you abstain from. It's not the food you abstain from. It's not the activities you abstain from. It's not anything that you do in and of yourself. That's what legalism says. It's what Christ did. We are justified by faith when we start living by this faith that He has provided for us, when we start living by blessed assurance, when we start living by the promises of God that He died for us, that He loves us unconditionally and without question, no matter what we do, no matter how far we strayed from Him, once we put our faith in Him, we are forever secured. We are eternally settled in heaven. But that love that God has for us wasn't in a storehouse somewhere waiting for the day we got saved. Watch this. 7 verses later, Romans 5 verse 8, "But God commendeth His love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." He loved us in the condition that we were. He loved us enough even then to want to change us. He loved us enough even then, as crooked, as lost, as undone, as defiled, and as hopeless as we were, to want to change us from the inside out. Sometimes the internet can be a pretty cool place. Other times, well, not so much. And that's why I've taken it upon myself to dive back into the depths of Twitter to see which side of the coin we're presented with this week. This week's hashtag is Disneyland for the 55 and Up Club. This should be interesting. The first response, Geriatric Park. Yeah, for those of you that don't know, that's the lesser-known nickname for the lazy river. All you've got to do is float. And plus, it's all water, so it takes pressure off your joints. It's an elderly person's dream. Who wouldn't want to do that? The next response is Epcot Chair Ride. I don't know about you, but those chair lifts, I think, are incredibly tempting to use, whether leisurely or getting things done. Am I the only one that thinks that everybody should be able to use it? Especially if you're getting things done, like I said earlier. Like if your laundry room is on the top floor of your house and you've got a really full basket, you don't want to carry it up the stairs because you think everything will spill out, just take the chair lift up the stairs and all the work's done for you. That is until you have to get out of the chair and balance the basket on both of your hands. The basket is way too full at this point, and you have to do that little half-walk, half-run thing that you do when you're in a rush, but you don't want to drop anything that you've got in your hands. Yeah, that's rough. I've been there. The next response, Snow White and the 7 Places That Ache When I Wake Up. I'm going to do the safe for podcast thing, and I'm not going to speculate on where those 7 places are. If I'm not careful, that could be dangerous. I at least know 3, though. Your head, your knees, and your back. That's as far as I'm going, so you won't get any more out of me. The 4th response, Mickey's Pickleball Court. You know, I've noticed a lot of people my age are getting into pickleball lately, so I wouldn't call it an old person sport just yet, but if you think it is, I'm not going to stop you from thinking that. To each their own. And the last response also has to do with Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse is 92, so you'll feel young if you dance with him. Phew, at that age, he should probably slow down. We don't want the American icon of animation to break anything. You, on the other hand, you don't need anybody to dance with. You can cut a rug on your own. I believe in you. Picture this, if you will. Women in matching checkered aprons. You might think that they're going to cook something, right? If you factor running shoes into that equation, you'll likely have an entirely different outcome. These women were preparing for what is known as the pancake race. It's a centuries-old tradition in only England, and here's how it happens. There's a set route that participants run every year while holding skillets with pancakes in them, and the one who makes it to the finish line the fastest wins that year's race. Pretty simple, right? Now that we know the route, let's go into the history of the race. It's an interesting little tidbit. In 1445, according to tradition, a woman from Olney heard church bells while she was making pancakes. And because she didn't want to be late for worship, she ran the entire way to church in her apron, while she was still holding her frying pan. Okay, now that we know a little bit about the history, back to the race. My thoughts on it are, no matter who wins, I think that everybody gets to eat the pancakes they've cooked at the end. Because I think about it this way, after all that running, after all that effort that you've put into winning the race and being declared number one, it's going to make you work up an appetite. And it's going to do the same for the person who came in second and third and fourth and fifth and so on. I don't know about you, but if I go through the trouble of fixing myself some pancakes or waffles or whatever, I'm going to eat them. Or somebody is. I might not be hungry that day. I might be fixing it for somebody else. But somebody is going to chow down on those pancakes. And if I'm running in a pancake-themed race, I don't know about you, but when I get to the finish line, no matter what place I come in, I'm going to indulge in what I've been promised. The annual pancake race is a celebration of what is known as Shrove Tuesday, or as most people know it, Pancake Day. And on Shrove Tuesday in England in the 1800s, all the eggs, the milk, the butter, and the fat would be used up because Lent would be a period of fasting, marking the time that Jesus fasted in the desert for 40 days. But that could be an episode entirely to itself. Leave a comment on Facebook. Would you want to hear it? An episode about the history of pancakes and how Pancake Day became a thing. Everybody loves pancakes, right? So why not make it happen? Thanks for listening to this week's episode. I'm really glad you could make it, and I hope you enjoyed the festivities. If you want to stay connected to the show, I'd invite you to pop on over to Facebook or Twitter and give the page a follow. Just search eBoneZone on Facebook and Official EBZ on Twitter. And if you want more from the podcast, visit the website, www.ebonezone.com. If you're new, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Until next week, my friend, God bless you, stay humble, and remember, keep an ear out.